Germany has a reputation for perfection, you know, like wild styles. I've never seen such amazing wild styles until, Jimmy, you guys come with it, like, hard. It's quite nice when something's a little bit boombastic and a bit, you know, almost confident in itself as the way it is.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember. I thought it was Russell who told me, but I'm not 100% sure. Somebody told me perfection is being insecure. So when you really know your style is solid and it's nice and has the funk, it don't have to be perfect. But that's something you have to learn, because you have to grow into your style. When you're a beginner, when you're a rookie, that's the only point you can see. You can know if it's clean, I got my check. Okay, made it. Mm-hmm. If it's matching to the wall, perfect. If I got kind of matching colors, perfect. There's just the stuff you can make on your bucket list. So anything else, the things you can feel and not see, you have to grow into it. And it took years, decades.
Yeah. Like that's personal, isn't it? It's the Killer Keller podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
Street Culture TV.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Essentials you need to be choosed to be. You don't want to be anywhere else. Big shout out to the sharers and carers, the people who have been supporting the craft of the podcast for so long. The pod trap is hot right now. We ain't stopping. We're just getting started. Our sponsors, the mighty GK Nifty Heads, have a massive 100,000 play-to-earn NFTs to give away to the streets. Just hit the link in the description or go to gknifty.com and get ready for HODL Wars Summer 2024. Inside the house right now, we have a gentleman. I got a feeling he's Nuremberg at the moment, Mannheim original. Stick up kids inside the place with compadres Cantu and Dime, not to mention TRS. We have Pablo, aka Hombre, inside the house. How are we, my brother?
Hey, man, so glad to hear. Thanks a lot for having me. I'm fine. It's a little bit late, it's a long day, but I'm super excited to be part of the show. I'm looking forward to the next 40 minutes.
Oh, my brother. Yeah, I tell you what, time is flying, brother.
Flying. It is. It is every day, every year, getting older, getting more tired. You know what it is?
Yeah, I do. Whereabouts are you in the world? Are you Nuremberg?
Right now I am Nuremberg, yes. I came back from the trip at the weekend, but just all over Germany, visited some friends, some galleries, some stuff like that. But now I'm back, hometown, Nuremberg.
Yeah, you're a regional and international traveler. Your skills have set you apart, and you get around a lot, my brother.
Yeah, but let's be honest, I'm tired. The last 2 years, I'm getting tired. I try to travel a lot, and I try to visit some jams, some friends, some good events. But yeah, the traveling, the kilometers, the miles, yeah, they kill my energy from time to time. So this year, I'm going to make it a little bit more slow.
You want to take it a little bit more slower? I can't imagine that, man. I can't imagine.
You know, it's this work-life balance and stuff like that. So, yeah, watch yourself a little bit.
Yeah, you got to be careful a little bit, right?
Yeah.
What's the German scene saying at the moment, man?
We're just starting. You know, spring is coming. Everybody was a little bit sleepy over the winter. I think it's the same all over the world. There are a few exhibitions. There are a few, I don't know, jams indoor, like the skater palaces and stuff like that. But yeah, you can see the sun's coming out. Today we got 28 degrees Celsius, which is super hot. So yeah, summer is coming. So everybody is waking up, preparing their cans. There are a lot of festivals and jams already dated for this year.
Right.
And so I'm pretty sure 2024 is going to be a colorful and nice year for sure.
Hell yeah. At this point, I want a big shout out Whisk ABC inside the place. He's definitely watching. And also big shout out to mutual friend of ours, Torch.
Nice.
Everybody that really is from an era that you're from, in a way. We're talking about the mid-90s. You really kind of set precedents. And of course, like, Stick Up Kids were were really part of that movement that Germany seemed to have a stronghold on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So this late 80s, early 90s cruise, like Sick Up Kids, for example, has really a big impact to the world, I think. So we started with this New York stuff coming overseas. And I remember especially also in my Mannheim, my hometown, it's very close to Heidelberg, where Torch is coming from as well. And Kane, for example, and knows a lot of this legends. And they really... they soaked up this New York style of the late 80s, and they put a little bit funk inside, and they some of this, you know, made in German quality, and they created something with a big impact all over Europe and I think all over the world as well. So these were the days were super impressive for myself, and these are the pictures why I wanted to start with this art form so much, seeing this colorful, clean pieces, especially back in the days when I started. I was super impressed by techniques as well. You know, at the beginning, when you're a young guy, you want to see colorful and clean stuff like that. You know, I wasn't that much into the dirty stuff that came later. So my region was really a good school for technique and for skills and for learn your tools and stuff like that.
There was also Lumit, who added a hell of a lot of new style to it. Was almost like you guys, for its time, almost you changed the forecasts of how graffiti should look, and it almost like gave it its own value and currency in a way, where it was at one stage, you know, like graffiti at its rawest and disposable and based on repetition and damage. You guys gave it a whole three-dimensional four-wheel drive vibe to it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it was was before me, of course, the next last generation. They put a lot of effort, you know. It's not like, okay, we are finished after 2 hours, let's go to the pub. It's more like, hey, we got 3 more hours daylight, so let's put some details in the background, and maybe we paint the wall from top to bottom and not leave a gray whatever on the top, stuff like that. It's really, you use all your energy and your time to make it as good as possible, and not just your style, also the background, the connections, the everything. Like you said, you read clouds and tags and 3Ds on the tags and stuff like that to make it really popping out. And this is still today.
Yeah, even still today. And the influence that had on the, you know, with the rest of the world, I mean, you know, Europe as a whole, but there was just something about I think you guys were some of the first to actually like really work with the designs and what was coming out brand-wise in the paints, you know, just taking it to that next level. And then, of course, you had the magazines as well.
Yeah.
You had a whole ecosystem going on for its time.
Yeah, true. I think that the magazines helped a lot, to be honest, you know, for inspiring other people, but also for getting inspired. So, you know, you can drive to one of these few stores back in the 90s and buy 2 or 3 magazines, which is not much for today. But back in the days, they were nothing. You're just sharing photos and stuff like that. So magazine with, I don't know, 50 pieces, that was like a workshop for a year.
Yeah, totally.
You can copy it, of course. Stuff like that. It was really, it's like exposural. You know, you're growing so much bigger than without these photos and influences, of course. So this ecosystem, which is today, of course, everybody's talk about sellout, stuff like that, for a while, not today. But it helped also. Of course, it's a kind of a structure where people from outside of the scene getting rich and try to get involved and stuff like that, but it helped the scene as well, let's be honest.
Interesting you say that. So do you think you noticed a rise, like you're right about the sellout thing, I think, with the emergence of street art and how that's propelled people from a non-hardcore scene. Did you feel that as an observer? Did you see that in the early to mid 90s as well from a Germany standpoint?
from today's point, I can see it as a consumer and as an activist in the 90s. It was just nice to have, let's be honest. You know, you get new spray cans, dope colors, new caps, more magazines. And when you are, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, teen, you don't think about this stuff. You don't think about who is running this system. You just, you are happy to get a chance to buy new stuff and don't have to collect every little detail you find in some magazines.
Yeah.
Which is cool. So back in the days, it was just super nice. But later, of course, you can see there were a lot of guys just wanted to get rich with this brand new culture.
Yeah, for sure. Bro, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking? We got to be a similar sort of age.
43.
Yeah, see, I'm 45. So you and me both kind of came through it at a kind of similar point, right? Where it's just like, it's like it was electric that time.
Yeah, it is. To be honest, you know, there I thought it was so so annoying to go in the train and drive through hours to buy one magazine. Of course, I would love to have it like, okay, there was no online, but like order it and get it with the mail, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But from point today, I'm so happy to get through all these points, to traveling with the train, to jams, to sleep on the train station, to collecting and to making exchange with sketches, photos, magazines, stuff like that. It's a way more private connection than today, where everything is so online, anonymous, and you don't know nobody for real.
Right, well, let's go back there. Let's take it back to you as a kid, as a young man, as a very young man. So how was Mannheim for you? How did you begin your journey in graph? Who influenced you more?
I was beginning there. I was in school, and we got a few kids came from Frankfurt, which is super close to Mannheim. It's around about an hour, 90 minutes, stuff like that. And they changed school. So they came to my class and they brought it with them. They started with Frankfurt some tags and some throw-ups. I'm pretty sure it was mid, but for me it was the very first I really not just saw but recognized and see the process and see them sketching in school. And you know, for me, I was none of these cool guys. You know, I was not sporty, I was not tall, I was reading, playing video games, stuff like that, a little bit nerdy, but way before nerdy was cool. So for me, I was super interested in, because it was sketching, it was art, something I was good in, because I always copied this Spider-Man, Super Mario stuff and make my own sketches. So I thought I had a way to be part of the cool guys with something I'm good at. You know what I mean? So it's just a short way to be part of this cool guys. And I started, and we, you know, like everybody in the basement of the parents, sketching, drinking the first beers, stealing outside.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, for me, I tell this in my workshops, the kids for the whole time, it wasn't the art who really soaked me into this culture. Mm-hmm. It was the vibe and the flavor. Because you're sitting around two, three, four, five guys. And okay, this was only guys in the 90s. You know, there was no women, no girls. Yeah. And you give yourself an alter ego. You give a secret name. Then you sneak outside wearing a mask, writing a name nobody is allowed to know on the wall. So you got this little mobster feeling. You know what I mean? So you're a little criminal. So, but not that much. You hurt nobody, but you're a little criminal.
Yeah.
And when you are 12, man, that's heaven on earth. It's so fascinating. So I wanted to do that for sure. No matter if I'm good or not, it doesn't matter. I just want to be part of this flavor.
Yeah. Secret society.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that idea. Mm-hmm. And it's like you say, as a 12-year-old, like, you don't, I mean, first of all, you do feel like you're absolutely immortal, right?
Yeah, of course you are. And then you're a superhero with a secret name and stuff like that, like in the comic.
Yeah, exactly. So who are you running with at that age? I mean, we're talking old school names right now that probably ain't about so much, right?
Yeah. Hey, we had, I don't know, we have some big heroes in Mannheim who are still legends. We have Gizmo. We had a few Kane pieces. We had Scare. Props to all of these guys.
Wow. Yeah, no, those are OG. I know those ones. Yeah, especially.
These are really OGs. So,
wow.
And as soon as I as I started to do it, as to be an active part of this culture, of course, your eyes are way more open than before. Mm. And then you see tags everywhere, throw-ups everywhere, bombings, and you start to learn the language, the attitude, the people, similar to the, and it's the same time you learn the technique. So you want to be, you want to also be part of this game, and you have to learn, yeah, being part of it with the uniform, with the language, stuff like that. And remember, we are 12, you're 13. So it's really in a time when you soak up everything and your character gets shaped so much.
Really?
So this is the age where you stop listening to your parents and start listening more to your friends and to yourself and heard to your inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
And this inner voice, and my friends as well, was Graf 24/7, 100%. So my mom made a pretty good job for 12 years. And then Graf took over and made another good job. So
Yeah. The stepmother came in. And
exactly.
Took over. Was there any, talking of role models, were there any like parental, like elder graph writers, people that were your peers that helped you along?
The problem was I really started from the very beginning with characters. Of course, I do some tags and stuff like that, but I wasn't good at it. I started, nobody's good when you start something new.
Yeah, for sure. But
I was also good with these characters because I painted before and sketched before and was into this comic book scene, stuff like that. So I was always asked for the black books, can you paint me a, I don't know, Spider-Man next to my piece, stuff like that, blah, 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 blah. Everybody was happy, but the scene wasn't that much. Of course, characters back in the days were just next to style. It was all about style writing. If you're not writing your name, you are not a writer. So I'm just a character painter. So it was super tough, to be honest, to get accepted by a few people I really wanted to impress. You know, these legends, this idol I know from my hometown or super close.
Mm.
And they told me, your stuff sucks. Of course, you don't paint letters. And there were just a few people in my area who painted characters as well.
Mm.
And these are, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years older than myself. I remember there was this guy, Mui. He's a Turkish guy from my hometown. He's still painting. He is one of just a few guys who really were able to teach me, to tell me a few stuff. All these other guys told me, learn letters or quit.
Really?
Yeah. Hey, we talk about 1995, 1994, something like that. So, it was all about letters, especially like I told you before, with this New York spirit in your mind.
Mm.
You know, it's letters, it's writing. Characters are just decoration, background.
It's got to be real. You've got to be able to do all of it at once, kind of. Is there a particular reason why? Because, I mean, to me, that seems... If someone says to me, do something to that force, that's going to make me go, nope.
Exactly, 100%. you do the completely opposite. Yeah. Everybody told me, stop this, don't do this character bullshit. Okay. I invest more time in character bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And you can learn the technique by yourself. You know, there wasn't that much tricks you can learn with the cans from the 90s. Just practicing.
Mm.
Just do it. And I remember there were a few years where I really painted 60 walls or 60 characters. So every week, sometimes 2 times a week, I go out practicing, painting. This is whatever I do, practicing makes masters. Just do it for yourself.
We'll
learn a few tricks, ask a few people, but at least do it and do it and do it.
Repetition is key. And one thing that has yielded, there's a word for you, yielded such quality has been your repetition. And looking at your characters now, in 2024, they are so identifiably you. Like... you would have had to have done a lifetime of training. Do you know what I mean? To get that level, crazy.
Yeah. But it's really funny because, today, whenever people see my stuff, it's, okay, it's not like this 2D B-boy characters from the side, but it's old school. You know, of course, it's clean colors. It's kind of clean shadows, stuff like that. It's a reduced shape. more or less. Mm. So for people who are 20 today or 21, 22, whatever, it's the old school style. And back in the day where old school living, it was nothing. It was worthless. There was no value about these characters. It's for me, sometimes it's really crazy when I talk with younger guys. So, man, you got this old school flavor. And the old school flavor was character sucks. So it's not the typical old school for me, for my personal experience, of course.
Yeah, that's interesting that falls in line with what they think is old school. Because... Yeah. Because in fact, it's kind of neither old nor new. It's timeless. It doesn't appear to be, like you said. Because if you trace back that defined old school look, you know, it's classy, but it's not. Yeah. You know, like Cantu, his character is a classic.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
It's classic, and a lot of it comes from those magazines and all those logos and the things that he embodied back then. And yours, for me, is like timeless. Like, how can you draw a comparison? It's certainly not throwaway in an old school sense.
I think for these guys, you know, I don't want to talk for these people, but I think when they talk about this old school thing, they talk way more about flavor over technique. You know, of course, today you can make this photorealistic stuff, or you can make this glowing eyes, blah, blah, blah. You know, today there are so many people who are maniacs with a spray can. They can do stuff I can't do digital. But this is handcraft. But the style, the flavor is something... You don't need all these lights and this and that, you know. Mm-hmm. Just pure. And I think for these kids, something without this decoration is old school. To make it simple in their heads, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's something I can deal with. If you tell me, in my work is more flavored than technique, I'm fine with that. I know there's technique. I know it's not easy to do it, but. Mm-hmm. When they say me, there's more flavor inside, I can live with that.
Bro, flavor over technique all day. Yeah. All day. Yeah. It's very rare I get a chance to talk to someone who specifies in character design and has achieved it to such a high level. My thoughts go to when you're in front of the wall, you're in front of the wall and you've got to keep a sense of perspective because it's quite a challenge, like keeping your eye on the piece to a level of realism, characterful energy, funk, like and then you stand back and you're like, yeah, I think we got it, but you're in the zone, so close to the wall and in the zone, getting the details. And how do you, what goes through your head? Like, how do you fill in the blanks?
I think it's really, like you said, this zone, this tunnel. When I got several times when I'm finished with the wall and I look at it and, you know, there are so many layers of details, you know, but it's not the plan before you start. When I start with a basic simple sketch, you got a rough idea, you got a rough skeleton of what's gonna be on the wall later, and then it's really I'm super addicted to this little this and that, you know. Yeah, we can paint a little earring. Yeah, we can do some lights on the earrings. Yeah, we do some letters in the earrings. We do this bamboo stuff out of the 90s, and we make some highlights here, and then there's a little cable from the head. Blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then you are on layer 20 at the end, and you step back and you see, oh, damn, and you met so much stuff. But when you show me at the beginning what I should do, you know, there are 20 layers we have to paint till 5 o'clock. So, oh man, that sucks a lot. So it only works when it's a process. I'm very focused on just one part, on one layer, and then the next, and then the next, and then the next. And after that, the blanks are filled. There is no blanks. Everything is full of details and little bows and crew tags and stuff like that.
And stuff like that. When you talk about layers, right? So, okay, first outline, first colors, fills, like how deep do the layers go? This is giving away the trade secrets here, people. Keep those ears open.
Hey, I give an example on my eyes, for example. I remember, of course, today when I'm painting an eye, I'm painting the shadow of the eyeball first. Let's say a mid gray, mm-hmm. and then I put the light into, which is an ivory, something like that, for example. Mm-hmm. And then let's a third layer now. Let's make the eyeball a little bit glow. Because what I call is contouring in makeup. When you got an edge, mm-hmm. just make it glow a little bit more on the light side to make it more popping out a little bit. You know what I mean? You got an ivory, you got a gray, and then you have the edge which you highlight a little bit with a white.
Yeah, got to make you.
It popping out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, now you got kind of an eyeball. Sometimes on the bottom, I do a little drop shadow from the lid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and then I do some dark gray or transparent black from top to make the shape, the ball shape as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I add the pupil, the you know what
pupil,
I mean, the
yeah.
color.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. We start with the outline. For example, a super dark brown, and then I fill it with a mid brown,
mm-hmm.
and there where the ivory hit it the gray, mm-hmm. I do a light brown in the mid brown, you know, yeah, and then exactly. Now we are on level I don't know 9.
Yeah,
and then you have a little black point in the middle,
yeah,
and then you make a white highlight to make it glow a little bit.
Mm.
And where the white is covering the pupil, you have to make a little bit transparent. Of course, it shouldn't just be white on the mm-hmm. eyeball. And that's like, you know, just... And back in the days, it was just a black dot and sometimes a white dot as a highlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's just... It's also based on your skills and techniques. When you're getting better and you can paint smaller and more detailed with pressure, with... leaving a little bit out of the fume and stuff like that, you want to add more, you want to expand your skills. So just more. I don't know how my eyes look in 10 years, but there will be a few more layers for sure.
Really? That is crazy. How long does it take you? Some real layman's questions here. Some real basic bitch questions here. It's because I'm totally...
Give it to me.
It's like totally curious about this process. So what? How long is an average piece? Can that take days?
Depends on the sizing, of course. But when it's a normal Hall of Fame, like, I don't know, 3 meters...
Mm.
No, I don't paint over 2 days. It's one day, and I'm slow. Let's be honest. I'm not, but I don't want to hurry myself. Of course, it's fun. I want to enjoy the day. I want to expand it over the whole day. So let's say 6 hours, 5 hours. I'm not fast. I'm not a bomber guy, but I can't keep the vibe over 2 or 3 days.
Mm.
So of course, when you paint a mural with I don't know 4 levels. Of course, it takes 3, 4, 5 days, but a normal piece should be done in one day.
And do you do any mapping? Do you like, do you kind of work?
Yeah. Yeah. The last, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do this doodle grid, like the whole scene does. And I know a few people call it cheating, stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. But it's so crazy what it does with my confidence when I go to the wall. Of course, mm-hmm. I had problems. I got a sketch and I started with, you know, classic, you make a ball for the head, the nose, and then go deeper. And fuck, I wanted to paint it to the hip. And now I'm just at the shoulders and have to stop because the wall is over. It happens a lot. But
really?
These days, wow. with this doodle grid is, when I'm happy with my rough sketch, I know it's going to be a dope piece. Of course, anything else is just... technique, handcrafting, and I know I can handle that. It's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it really helps me to focus on the part I love to do, the details, the colors, the outline, stuff like that. And I don't have to think about proportions and stuff like that.
Do you have a obsessive compulsive like nature?
Like, what do you mean? Sorry.
Sorry, do you have like an obsessive compulsive behavior where you obsess on the details, like they have to be perfect and in your head, or else it gives you anxiety or makes you feel, oh, it's not right?
I really try to leave it behind me. Of course, I don't know. At the beginning, I was really obsessed with make it perfect. You know, it should look like a print. Cut every line, make it clean as possible, stuff like that. But today, I really think when you make it too clean, when it's, and there is a too clean, it lost its soul. So today, there are a few details I want to have perfect. For example, the eyes, like I told you before. But on the other side, sometimes I really like to make a quick a shuffle, don't fill it completely, for example, or you know, if a little bit fat cap flare goes over the outline, I don't care, you know, it's hand painted, it's artwork, it's not a print, it's not just decoration, it should be handmade. You can see the little dust and the little mistakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I feel that, man. I mean, for starters, like, you know, eyes are the entry to the soul, so if you don't get the eyes right, it's a problem, but it's quite nice, man, when Germany has a reputation for perfection, you know, like wild styles. I've never seen such amazing wild styles until, Jimmy, you guys come with it like hard. It's quite nice when something's a little bit bombastic and a bit, you know, almost confident in itself as the way it is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I can't remember. I thought it was Russell who told me, but I'm not 100% sure. Somebody told me perfection is being insecure. So when you really know your style is solid and it's nice and has the funk, it don't have to be perfect. But that's something you have to learn, because you have to grow into your style. When you're a beginner, when you're a rookie, that's the only point you can see. You can know if it's clean. I got my check. Okay, made it. Mm-hmm. If it's matching to the wall, perfect. If I got kind of matching colors, perfect. There's just the stuff you can make on your bucket list. So anything else, the things you can feel and not see, you have to grow into it. And it took years, decades.
Yeah, like that's personal, isn't it? It's personal. Yeah, I love that. How did you become a part of SUK? How did that come about?
That's a nice hip hop story. Let's be honest.
Everyone loves a good and nice hip hop story.
That's dope. I can't remember the year, but I know Puma made a, I think it was a Glide, but maybe it was a few. I'm not sure. They make a Baudet edition to make the red Puma and the sole inside. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Had this star pattern, stuff like that, and on the thong you have this little Baudet character. So they released it, and the Stieber twins, you know them?
Yeah, I love the Stieber twins. Yes, big up boys.
They got a store in Heidelberg. Still have them, nice. And they make a little backyard party for the release. So they make a barbecue, they some freestyle stuff, so this and that, and they sponsored a few big canvases and invited a few friends to paint an interpretation of a Baudet character. And they asked Scotty, for example, Sir Scott a lot. They asked Atom, they asked Cantu, and they asked the little Ombre as well. So I think Kane was there as well, but I'm not sure. So there's 5-6 people, all of these legends and the little boy.
Too much. Wow.
It was awesome. It was the vibe. It wasn't summer. We got a barbecue. All of this brown bricks. It was like wild style. Like into the movie. It was awesome for me. It was like
your head must have been going crazy, bro.
I try to be cool so much, you know. that shouldn't be my fanboy moment, but of course it was my fanboy moment.
The 20, right?
Yeah. But it was there. I tried to enjoy. I tried to paint a kind of a good canvas. And right next to me, Cantu was painting. And I remember I wrote him a few weeks before a mail on MySpace. Remember that? Mm-hmm,
of course.
Yeah, of course. So I write him a mail, and I remember pretty sure. I write him, sir, I'm not sure if you read your emails by yourself or if you got a secretary, whatever. I just want to say I'm a huge fan, blah, blah, stuff like that. And this was the time. I painted 10 years already, so I was not this super, super toy, but I was super humble, and Cantu was and is the legend himself. So
yeah.
So I just wanted to give him some flowers and spread some love. That's it. And he wrote me back, just a few mails. I mean, yeah, of course I read my mail. Thanks a lot. I love your work as well. And okay, nice. That's it.
Yeah.
And then we met the first time in person at this backyard party. And he painted right next to me. Of course, you can't spend the whole day without talking. And even if I wanted to be humble and I wanted to be cool, after a while, you start a little conversation like this and like that. Yeah, and so we get in touch the very first time. And we wrote a mail from time to time. And he asked me if he wanted to make a piece together, just in my hometown, just not a secret spot, but a quiet spot, not that much people. Super cool. We came, he painted two characters, a huge piece, and the background in the same time. I try to paint one character as good as it gets. Machine. He's a maniac. He's incredible. And then I remember the day, but not the date. I'm sitting in my office and I get a short message on my mobile. And so, blah, blah. Hey, I just thought about get some young blood in the crew. Would you be interested?
What?
And I really thought, okay, that must be a mistake. I must be red. He asked me for who you see in the crew or something like that. You know, And I said, I don't know, maybe this. And then said, yeah. I asked already. Matt C was on the same day, part of the Thick Up Kids, and J Flo from Korea. And so I asked them already, but I asked you as well. He said, oh, come on, man. So that's not a question. Of course, it would be, I don't know, it would be a pleasure to be part of this King Arthur knights of, you know, killing the style dragons. So awesome.
Yeah. It's not a question. It's more of a statement. It's more of him telling you. It's like, you're not going to say no. It's like,
Of course not. And I remember I got my Stick Up Kids tattoo 2 days after that. Yeah, I wanted to manifest as soon as possible, just in case it was a mistake. Then it's too late. You know, I got tattooed. You can't kick me out. Come on.
Yeah, no kicking me out now. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that is one of the most hip hop stories I've heard in 2024 yet.
And it's really, for me, it's a lot of people ask me, of course, there are so many people in the crew, let's be honest, all over the world. And there are a lot of people I never met till today. And even with the German guys, I think the maximum we were together were five people on one place painting a piece. So there is not like a big Stick Up Kids jam. It's not possible. We are grown-up men having businesses all over the world.
Yeah,
it's difficult. And so, of course, there are a few voices who told me this is not what a crew should be. But
of course, like, they always say that, don't they?
But for me, it's like you said, being part of the Thick Up Kids is that's a statement. So that's I'm part of the elite of the style, which is defining my kind of graffiti, like this late 90s high quality, super advanced style killers, and I'm part of it. So for me, it's like, I'm wearing the jersey of the team I was cheering up since I was a little kid, and I can play in this league now.
Talk that shit!
It doesn't matter if you have a barbecue every Saturday. So I'm part of this team. They wanted me because they see the same flavor in me I saw in them over decades. So it's perfect. For me,
I absolutely applaud that. You know, there's only some crews which you can say, yes, they, them. You know what I mean? Like, Rocksteady Crew, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, from an international point of view, for sure.
Yeah.
Do we all go out and, you know, have barbecues? No.
Every weekend.
Not every weekend, anyway. But, you know, it's not really... I mean, I know people have their own opinions of crews, but, like, if you're as well... connected organizationally. Yeah. Do you mean that is far more powerful globally?
Yeah. Of course, you know, when you are 15, I got your point. It's important to hang out with your guys, to share a sketchbook, to go out together and painting trains. Cool. Absolutely, 100%. But it's something you can change when you are 30 or 40 or 50. Let's be honest. You can't share every Wednesday and Saturday with your guys. Yeah. You have two kids at home. You have a wife. You have a job. You have to travel. You have to pay. That's not possible. That's just not possible.
It's not possible. And I think a lot of times, I mean, correct me if you think otherwise, but I often feel like the people that make those statements about, you know, crews need to be are people that actually haven't advanced in like their thinking of like what graffiti writing collectively should be.
Or could be, you know, it's like, but should be. The graffiti has so many elements right now. For me, it's always cool when you painted a lot in the 90s, but hey, you got a job, you got a wife, you got a kid, and you meet 2 times a year for your birthday and for Father's Day to have a barbecue and paint a nice wall with the guys from back in the days. That's fine.
Yeah, that's cool.
Absolutely. And of course, for you, this is the kind of graffiti you want to live. Of course, there's no other option as well. Let's be honest. You can't do it 24/7.
Nah.
But there is a way, and there are people who do it like that. Who travel the world for 6 months, and they can't live your kind of graffiti, which is okay. Do your stuff, let me do my stuff, everything's fine. There's enough space and whatever for all of us.
Like 1UP, for instance, you know, they roll collectively. It feels like they roll collectively, exactly to how we're explaining, but also they're global.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like it.
Yeah.
And in their way, it makes sense. Like you say, it's each to their own, isn't it? It doesn't have to be one particular way that you have to point the crew out and say, you're not real, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It's funny how what's interesting is the attitude, you know, it's the same, it's a similar common attitude of kind of purism in the UK as what we're talking about here globally. It's very interesting how that attitude can sometimes come about, isn't it?
I think it's always, you know, it's easy to hate things who are not part of your bubble. You know, when you live another life, it's easy to hate other people.
Yeah,
but yeah, you have to be open-minded. Of course, graph is, these days is so big, it's so huge, so many different facets. It's okay, it's cool. Let it grow. But it's funny because it's selfish. I remember another super short story.
I was in
Italy, and there was a few young guys who make interviews with the artists, and they got a super nice question because it wasn't so basic. They asked me if you have two animals to define graffiti, which two animals you would pick?
That's a mad question. Okay.
Yeah, man. So what's your answer? Answer first.
Mine? What two animals to do? What, to pick graffiti?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good question. Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Elephant.
Tiger for the camouflage, for being...
Yeah.
Okay.
An elephant for the size and the brains.
Okay. I had peacock.
Nice.
Because they're super selfish, and I got monkeys for putting shit on everything.
Good.
Each other. So for me, till today, these would be my two animals, because that's graffiti for me. Oh, they are nice animals. They are cool. A few of my best friends are animals, but they behave like raccoons on meth. But just, you know, you have to deal with that.
You know what's funny is that, you know, graffiti artists, some of the most, you know, noted and worldly known and pioneering and credit, you know, it's a mixed fruit bowl of fruit, isn't it? And, you know,
it is. And the crazy thing is whenever people from outside talk to you, they think that all graffiti writers are the same. They are friends with each other. It's like telling me everybody's playing football or soccer is the same type of guy. No, we just share this one element. We're painting at the wall. That's it. Next to this, completely different persons.
Totally. Yeah. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
It's all one big dance.
And for me, I think especially this common thing is so much bigger than all of the differences. Because whenever you are in the world, when you go to the airport and get picked up by a graffiti writer, it doesn't matter if he is a cannibal. It doesn't matter. So you know you will have a good time because of this little graffiti part you share with each other. You're going to have a good day. You're going to have a bed. You're going to have some good food just because both of you are doing graffiti.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
It's amazing. I mean, I don't think there's any other art form like it that, you know. I mean, of course, there are hip-hop genres.
Yeah.
But we're talking about something that is, it's therapeutic. People share that creative space together. That's crazy.
So even if you don't speak the language, you know, with hands and feet, like this karate language, you will have a connection.
Yeah.
This is especially today with the possibilities to connect worldwide. I'm pretty sure, you know, wherever in the world you are, just drop a message, post a story, whatever, and you will have a bed and you have some breakfast.
Yeah. It's just so true.
With people you never heard of and you don't know, it doesn't matter. You know, you are part of this game. We share what we got.
God, that's good. My brother, honestly, we could do this all night. But honestly, your contribution to the bigger tapestry of the Killer Keller podcast is greatly appreciated. My brother, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Hey, it was a real, real pleasure. It's so much fun. I hope I could make a few points clear. You know, I talked to you before, the language is difficult, but no.
We couldn't understand a word. You were, bro, are you crazy? Great.
Hey, thanks a lot. It was really so much fun.
My brother, listen, anytime. And I'm going to definitely holler at you when I'm next in town, bro. I got you, man.
You got a bed, you got breakfast, whatever you want. Just my give me a call.
And likewise to you too. Get yourself to London, man. We need some energy.
Be quiet. I'll be there this year. I'll write you a line.
I'm ready, man. Let's do it.
Cool, man.
Killer podcast style. It was out of fashion, man. Big shout out to Ombre, of course. And loads more podcasts. 500, in fact, in the back pocket. If you want to go check them out. Listen, don't talk to anyone and I wouldn't, all right? Crime don't pay, but neither do they. You stay lucky, people. Easy.